Now, from the Daniel Scappin Studio, deep in the foothills of the North Georgia mountains, it's Mike Malloy.
Here we are. Hello, everybody. It is the 17th of August. 2018. It is a Friday. We're recording this Friday morning. So if a verdict comes in on the Manafort trial later on this afternoon, you'll have to get it someplace else. Oh, no. It's been another god-awful week in terms of the leadership of this country. You don't need me to tell you that. However, it does seem that Trump is getting closer and closer and closer to the breaking point where he is going to do something so outrageous, which I cannot believe that the Congress of the United States has decided what he's done so far is not so outrageous as to warrant impeachment and removal from office. But they're Republicans. What do you expect from the American Fascist Party? They don't give a shit. I don't know what it would take to remove this bastard from office legally and peacefully, which is the prerogative of the Congress. But there must be something. There must be something that this rat bastard would do that would cause the legislative branch of government to find its spine, its courage, and remove the son of a bitch. Oh, well. I was thinking earlier today about one of the stories I mentioned last night, one of the topics about a little boy in Florida who showed up at the Christian school for first day of school with his hair in very well managed, cut, arranged little dreadlocks. Our daughter Molly has hair that is all over the place. She has very thick, big hair. Curly. Very curly. And I can only imagine what it would be like if Molly went to school and they said, well, your hairstyle is not in keeping with Christian values. Of course, that would never happen because I would never allow her to be exposed to this religious horse shit anyway, on any level. But anyway, this little black kid, when he showed up at school and the Christian school told him that his dreads did not, quote, uphold Christian standards. Christian fucking standards. 6-year-old kid. Now, here's the part that really started getting to me. If that little boy is determined not to uphold Christian standards, what about the white supremacist pig in the White House who has sex with porn stars, calls black women dogs, and is considered by the Christian evangelical right in this country to be God's anointed? Now, there is hypocrisy, which the Christian church, all phases of it, I don't give a shit, Protestant, Catholic, Orthodox, I don't care. The Christian church is riddled with hypocrisy. Hypocrisy is its middle name. But the endorsement and the support and the sucking up to Trump should cause every goddamn Christian in America, in my humble opinion, of course I know 99.9% will not do this, just like the other branch of Christianity, the Catholics, they don't give a shit how many of their little boys are raped and little girls are raped. They don't give a fuck. Oh, we'll make noises about it, but if the Pope says he's praying for the victims, everything's okay. Crazy bastards. But we know, or I know, you should know, that the Christian church is riddled with hypocrisy. But how far are the members of Congress willing to go with this Christian bullshit? How far are the evangelical preachers in this country? A curse on you. You people who stand in the pulpit every Sunday and don't condemn this fucker for being the pig that he is. Talk about Omarosa being a dog. You can't tell the difference between a dog and a pig? And yet you do it every Sunday. You'll do it day after tomorrow. Some of you right-wing sons of bitches will get up in your pulpits before your thousands of dues-paying member cult members and extol the glories and the benefits of having Donald Trump as president. Well, I wish there was a little bit, I've said this before, I wish there was a little bit of truth to the Christian religion, and that is, For the adherents of that blood cult, only the adherents, that if they lived a life that was not what their Messiah told them to live, then they would burn into little crispies in hell forever. But they know that's bullshit. Those preachers that stand up there, they know fucking A well. When they're talking about hellfire and damnation, oh, get off it. That's the way to keep the idiots in line. But it's just staggering to me. It is not upholding Christian standards when a little kid has dreads, but the fuckers will do anything to keep Trump in office, a sex maniac, calls women dogs, a white supremacist, a Klan lover. Not sex maniac, but fuck that. I just mean a sex freak. I know what would happen if these Christian devils caught Trump in bed with a young boy or a dead girl. Would that do it, you hypocrites? No, I know. I know. And speaking of this moron, he had another partially open cabinet meeting yesterday. Oh, my God. You know how he started it? By calling, by calling Aretha Franklin, one of his former employees. The rest of the music world, politicians, praising the fact that Aretha Franklin, or as her friends called her, Riri, that she was such a force, a dynamic force for justice, music, freedom, freedom, freedom! And this useless piece of racist shit sits there and says, Queen of Soul died. She was my former employee.
Like a housekeeper.
What a fucking idiot. That's how the meeting began, according to New York Times. It ended with him saying that things were looking up for American farmers who've been stung by the effects of his psychotic trade war against American farmers, actually. He thinks he's hurting China. And in between, according to New York Times, this asshole called on his top economic advisor to publicly share, quote, his very beautiful assessment of the economy. Very beautiful. And he said that Mexico and China were waging war against the United States because they're exporting drugs to kill Americans. Yeah, and when the Chinese and the Mexicans do that, they send over these little 4-inch high people who run around and they have hypodermic needles and they force Americans to take the fucking drugs. And they pry their mouths open and they throw oxycodone down their throats. In other words, it was a normal cabinet meeting in the age of Trump. All the cabinet secretaries did their required down on their knees and do a figurative, a metaphorical blowjob to this crazy son of a bitch. And every one of them will do it. Good God. Julie Herschel Davis, writing The Times, says, what was once considered a dry policy discussion, you know, a cabinet meeting, among restrained public servants has turned into a kind of West Wing performance art, featuring a president prone to exaggeration and his advisors taking turns praising him and his policies. Oh, hallelujah, President Trump. We love you. We just love you so much. You're so God anointed. Herschel Davis says, by now the ritual has become familiar. It's like watching a monthly installment of a reality show with a storyline that has become comically consistent. This miserable shit sits there and says something outrageously stupid like, oh, yeah, Aretha Franklin, yeah, she used to work for me. Yeah, I know her. What does she do for you, you fucker? Huh? What does she do for you? She refused to sing at your inauguration. That's one thing she did for you, you asshole. During yesterday's episode of this bullshit display of sycophancy and illness on the part of the cabinet members, not to mention Trump, he said, quote, despite the horrible laws, we're doing well. What horrible laws are those, Trump? The ones that have caught you by your scrotum, stealing the election, colluding with the enemy, obstructing justice, violating your oath of office, you miserable bastard. He then invited Kirstjen Nielsen, the Secretary of Homeland Security, to detail all the successes that the Trump administration is having in stopping those dirty, rotten, funny-talking brown people at the southwestern border, huh? Kirstjen, nice Norwegian girl, will you tell us, yeah, huh? When Kirstjen stood up, she made no mention of the hundreds of children that are still separated from their parents and fucking missing. This goddamn government doesn't know where they are. Then Trump, according to Times, spent much of the session gently quizzing his cabinet secretaries with lead-ins, prodding them to offer positive comments about him. And past sessions have occasionally produced nasty little fucking barbs out of the president's pie hole directed at whatever cabinet member didn't sufficiently praise the dear leader. Yesterday, cabinet members, Hirschfeld writes, were largely spared the indignity of having to give him a metaphorical blowjob. But when Mr. Trump turned to Jeff Sessions, the little goblin that Trump just loves to taunt, doesn't he? Huh? Trump put old Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III kind of on the spot when Trump asked him to bring, quote, a major federal lawsuit against drug companies over opioids. Trump said to Sessions, In China, you have some pretty big companies sending that garbage and killing our people. It's almost a form of warfare. And I'd like to do whatever you can do legally to stop it from China and from Mexico. Now, if you're familiar with these circle jerks that Trump loves to include in his reality show called My Presidency, you know that he uses these cabinet members' meetings not to discuss policies or the needs of the American people, but to publicly vent a particular bitter grievance that he might have. That he focuses on one of the hapless cabinet members, and they sit there and take it. They put their depends on before they go into the meeting so that when they shit themselves, it won't get all over their nice new suits. But they sit there and take it. Huh? They avoid eye contact. They shift uncomfortably in their chairs. That happened last month when Trump used the cabinet meeting as a backdrop to attempt a half-hearted baby step walk back of his obstruction and collusion and plotting with Vladimir Putin in Helsinki last month. Remember that? But not yesterday. Trump did not allow the conversation, and he didn't bring it up, about his decision to start stripping people of their security clearances because he's just pissed off about the witch hunt. And you don't criticize me. Instead, like I said, he began by noting the death of Aretha Franklin, the Queen of Soul. This is what he said as he opened the meeting. This is a direct quote. I want to begin today by expressing my condolences to the family of a person I knew well. She worked for me on numerous occasions. She was terrific. Aretha Franklin. Nobody could figure out what the hell he was talking about, although on numerous occasions during her career, she sang at Trump-owned properties. She didn't like Trump. She saw him for what he was, a white male pig, racist, scum, pick a word, I don't care. But worked for me? And then in the middle of a healthcare update from the Labor Secretary, Mr. Acosta, Trump got involved in some wishful thinking, let's call it. I call it unadulterated horseshit, but let's call it wishful thinking about the repeal of the healthcare law enacted under Obama. And Trump said, well, we actually got rid of Obamacare, except for one vote.
Oh.
Ah. He's referring to John McCain, of course. Two other Republicans also voted against its repeal, as did 48 Democrats, but never mind. That's not Trump world. Trump lives in a psychosis, a little swirling mass where people stand around and praise him and adore him and tell him what a wonderful leader he is. Except for that fucking John McCain. Ooh, he makes me angry. Trump also offered his own bullshit explanation. It says explanation, but it doesn't explain anything. State officials in California and firefighting experts more or less said he is so full of shit as a Christmas goose. But he was trying to explain the scourge of wildfires ravaging California. He said they were the result of water being diverted into the Pacific Ocean. That's it. That's absolutely it. And you know who diverted that water into the Pacific Ocean? Those environmental terrorists. Ryan Zinke will tell you that. Secretary of Interior. He knows. Jesus Christ. And then he said something I don't get. You know, they're little fish called smelt. I don't know anything about them except their name. This is what Trump said. Quote, "We're spending a fortune in California because of poor maintenance and because, frankly, they're sending a lot of water out to the Pacific to protect the smelt." What the fuck? I'm assuming smelt are saltwater fish. What would shooting freshwater into something as enormous as the Pacific Ocean have to do with protecting the smelt? This man gives the word ignorant a bad name. But there's got to be something beyond ignorant. And then he called on this little asshole Ryan Zinke. What a traitor this man is. But he wanted Zinke to repeat an argument that Zinke had made earlier in the day on television, that climate change was in no way responsible for the horror that's been hitting California. No, it has nothing to do with climate change. It has to do with environmental terrorists. It has nothing to do with climate change. Trump said, quote, "Ryan was saying it's not global warming thing. It's not a global warming thing. It's, you know, management situation." And then Zinke, I mean, this crazy fucker, I don't know if Zinke was this insane before he got this close to Trump. I'm assuming he was. But Zinke blamed Canadian lumber imports for what Zinke called displacing American-grown lumber on the market, which leaves fallen trees to rot and become combustible. So it's Canada's fault. You know what Trump said when Zinke said that with a nod? So ridiculous. So ridiculous. The irony there is so thick you can cut it with a fucking side of your hand. The whole meeting was ridiculous. Trump is ridiculous. Zinke is ridiculous. Now, if you remember what happened yesterday, newspapers around the country, after Trump had tweeted fake news media is the opposition party, hundreds of newspapers ran editorials condemning his attacks as a threat to press freedom. And Trump said that this live 57-minute meeting with his cabinet they got a lot done, didn't they? "May I kiss your ass again, Mr. President? Oh, is there another part of your anatomy you want me to kiss? Oh, I'll be happy to, sir. You're such a godly leader." But Trump said, he told a small group of reporters representing the White House press corps at the meeting, Trump turned to them and he said this, quote, "If you'd like, you can stay. Or if you'd like, you can also leave. Don't forget, freedom of the press. Freedom of the press." You mocking son of a bitch. Well, Steve Mnuchin, this gruesome little fucker who's the Secretary of the Treasury, said he was ready to impose additional sanctions on members of Turkey's government, the leader of which, Erdogan, is ready to invade the United States. He's so pissed off. And then some of the other shit that Trump wanted to share was just out-and-out bullshit. For example, he asked Sonny Perdue former governor here in Georgia. Oh. He asked Sonny Perdue, who's now the agriculture secretary, how American farmers are faring. Before Perdue could answer, Trump said, "The farmers like Trump." Who talks about themselves in the third person like that? Trump added, "They're selling corn and they're selling the soybean." The soybean. "And they're selling everything at levels that are soon going to be really great levels. I'm hearing it's starting to really pick up." Prices for agricultural exports fell last month by the largest percentage in 7 years, driven in large part by a major drop for soybeans, or the soybean. So Perdue, you know, he's from Georgia. He pushed back just a little bit, not very much. He said, "Well, obviously there's some price constraints right now." Ooh, you got balls there, Sonny. God damn, you said that to Trump? "Well, obviously there's some price constraints right now." Don't hit me, don't hit me, don't hit me. Perdue told Trump that the farmers were keeping the faith. Perdue then added, quote, "They believe what you're doing in China, as you've tried to indicate to them, will lead to a better and brighter future." And then the house lights went down and the music came up and the credits rolled across your TV screen. Fuck me running. All right, Kathy, may I have a break, please, so I can clear this garbage out of my head and move on to the next layer. I'll be right back. No, his mind is not for rent. Yesterday, the U.S. Senate, now you better sit down for this, the U.S. Senate unanimously passed a resolution that, in a very roundabout way, condemned the fucker in the White House's attacks on the press. Yeah, the resolution didn't mention Trump by name, but the resolution that everybody in the Senate voted for affirmed that, quote, "the press is not the enemy of the people," end quote. Oh, hey, listen, senators, you've just utterly redeemed yourself. All of you, men, women, black, men, women, Jew, Gentile, Democrat, Republican, you all have just absolutely, I'm not forgetting the black senator from South Carolina. This is the United States, 1 out of 100, you know. You've redeemed yourselves. Not. Of course, this was in response. You know, the Republican-led Senate couldn't lead its way out of a fucking burning house. But after the 300 newspapers around the country ran editorials criticizing this bastard's rhetorical attacks on the press, then the U.S. Senate found the courage to say, oh, well, maybe we should jump on board and pass a resolution. There's a resolution you should pass, only it's more like a verdict. If your filthy friends in the House would vote to impeach this son of a bitch, you senators could redeem yourselves, every one of you, even you Freedom Caucus scum from North Carolina. You know who I'm talking about, Mr. Burr. You could redeem yourselves in part by just finding the son of a bitch guilty of all the impeachable offenses that he has committed. So the Senate passed a resolution saying, the press is not the enemy of the people. Really? And then this morning, Trump tweeted out that he decided to cancel that big-ass military parade through D.C. And you know why he canceled it? Because the city of Washington, D.C. had put such a big price tag on it. The city. He called it a ridiculously high price tag. Now, yesterday, if you remember, U.S. officials said that this form of masturbatory pleasure for Trump, I mean, if he wants to jerk off, that's his business. But down Pennsylvania fucking Avenue with the entire military and the world watching, do we all have to participate in his masturbatory fantasies? I say no. What do you say? But when it was revealed yesterday that his little event would cost $92 million, more than three times the original cost, and the original cost was horseshit. I mean, come on. That's when he said, okay. And when he tweeted yesterday, this morning, he accused local Washington, D.C. politicians of price gouging. The city. Oh, my God. But the estimates, the preliminary, this is not final, preliminary estimates from the Pentagon showed that more than half of that $92 million would come from military aircraft, equipment, personnel, and other support, which, believe it or fucking not, the city of Washington, D.C. has no control over. They really don't. Trump, you moron. And the remainder of the cost would be borne by other agencies, largely involving security costs, federal security, which, hey, Donnie, the city of Washington doesn't have anything to say about that either. But the city of Washington is run by coloreds, right? The Defense Department had announced yesterday there would be no parade in 2018. They said it. So Trump tweeted that, okay, maybe something can be included next year when the price, quote, comes, all caps, way down. How's that going to happen, moron? Oh, never mind. He didn't explain how the cost would be reduced, but, you know. Anyway, this is what he tweeted, quote, the local politicians who run Washington, D.C., and then in parentheses, poorly, well, they're coloreds. Know a windfall when they see it. When asked to give us a price for holding a great celebratory, whatever, military parade, they wanted a number so ridiculously high that I canceled it. Never let someone hold you up. I will instead attend the big parade already scheduled at Andrews Air Force Base on a different date, and I'll go to the Paris parade celebrating the end of the war on November 11th. Maybe we will do something next year in D.C. when the cost comes way down. Now we can buy some more jet fighters for $92 million. Jesus fucking Christ, this guy. I wonder if somebody has asked him what the event in Paris, the Paris Parade, what war it's celebrating, and when that war ended. And who fought it? Jesus fucking Christ. And maybe somebody could ask him the significance of the 11th hour, of the 11th day, of the 11th month. since he's going to Paris on the parade is on the 11th day of the 11th month. What, the 11th hour is missing there. But what does that represent, you fucking idiot? Huh? You said the parade celebrates the end of the war. Which one? Who fought it? What does 11-11-11 stand for? No, it's not the number of electoral votes you got over Hillary. So the mayor of Washington, Muriel Bowser, shot back at this asshole this morning after the asshole blamed the mayor of Washington for jacking up the price of his little masturbatory fantasy. In a tweet, Mayor Bowser said that she had gotten through to the, quote, reality star in the White House, end quote, that high costs for a large-scale military parade honoring veterans in the city was a bad idea. She wrote, she didn't tweet this to him, but she tweeted this. Yep, I'm Muriel Bowser, mayor of Washington, D.C., the local politician who finally got through to the reality star in the White House with the realities of parades, events, demonstrations in Trump America. Sad. Now, the Pentagon had also said no parade in 2018. We'll take a look at 2019, but this is bullshit. I'm sure they said that in private. What's with this fucking guy, you know? Oh. We have a VA system that does need some help. We have a medical care delivery system in this country that could certainly use an infusion, although it would be a drop in the bucket of $92 million. We have all sorts of necessities, and this miserable son of a bitch wanted to get all his little tanks and airplanes and soldiers in a line and make them march down Pennsylvania Avenue. Look, look. Oh, here comes a plane. How about that? Is this shit making you crazy? I know. I've been bringing this up every podcast. But, you know, there comes a point, there really does, I think. Over the course of my life, I have watched other countries spiral into collective madness because the leadership of those countries have gone totally insane, completely off the rails. I think of leadership, juntas, whatever you want to call them, in Central America, South America, Africa, Asia. And now it's infecting the white people in Europe, where you have a leadership that is so crazy, so crazy, that a country can go for. I think of Zimbabwe. And the reason I think of Zimbabwe is because I recently had a pair of glasses made, and the optometrist was from, well, he's from Nigeria, but he understood everything that was going on in nearby Zimbabwe. And as Kathy will tell you, as soon as I sit down with someone who has an accent, I'll say, where are you from? And as soon as they tell me, off I go, talking about Erdogan or Mugabe or Xi or whoever. It's just me. I love to hear directly from people who have lived there, who have been in those situations. So anyway, this optometrist's name, he had an African last name, which means I couldn't pronounce it. But his first name was Victor. That's what his name tag said. And he was telling me about Rhodesia, Zimbabwe. He was old enough to remember when Zimbabwe got its independence. When, who was it, Ian, who is the white guy who ran Rhodesia. I want to say Ian Anderson, but he was a rock star. Ian Fleming? I forget. Anyway, he was telling me what happened in Zimbabwe, that Mugabe was insane, and Mugabe ran for re-election again. The fucker is in his 90s. He has no concept of where he is, what he's doing, who he is, or why he's running for office. And the people of Zimbabwe had to watch their country go from being, yes, it was white dominated, and yes, it was a good idea to get rid of the white folks, but replace the white leadership of Zimbabwe, of Rhodesia, with black leadership of Zimbabwe under Mugabe, who then decided, oh, look, I've got a huge piggy bank, and it's mine, sort of like Trump. So my optometrist, or ophthalmologist, I should say, was giving me some insights into the whole slide of Zimbabwe from a net exporter of farm goods, produce, to the rest of Africa, and some of it was going to other countries, the countries in the Middle East, some of it even went to Europe, to a net importer where people are starving. And Victor said, a lot of folks in the United States who have observed this want to say it's because blacks didn't know how to govern themselves. He says, let me tell you, that is not true. We have had 10,000 years of governing ourselves until the white imperialists, colonialists, came to Africa, destroyed our natural boundaries, ended the tribal delineations that said who was who and where was where and what was what, and imposed European-style rule and law and religion on us, and Western-style corruption. So he said it wasn't because white leadership left and black leadership took over. It was because of the leadership that took over, if you'll ignore the color, was criminal. And the conversation expanded out, as those conversations will, into parallels between states that started as nascent democracies and wound up as self-destructive fascist regimes. And how, for someone who is from a different country, Victor has U.S. citizenship now, but someone who has been there, wherever there is, and observed the United States from there, and then has come here and observed the United States as a citizen, to see what this monster Trump is doing, and this was Victor's word, is heartbreaking. Heartbreaking? Where was I? Former Defense Secretary Robert Gates has signed a statement, and I don't know who else is involved in the signing, but the statement condemns Trump's decision to revoke the security clearance of John Brennan, former CIA director. NBC News reported that this morning. Now, Gates, of course, he's respected by both political parties. He served under Bush 2 and Obama. And again, this is the conundrum for me. Gates carried out the policies of Bush and some of the policies of Obama that I think most progressives can agree were not the kinds of policies that we would want carried out in our name, but we really don't have any choice about this shit. So, or any say about it. I don't care who we elect. So even though Gates and most of the people who held a position in this country of Secretary of Defense have an awful lot to answer for, which they never will, because no one will ever hold them accountable for the murder and mayhem that the United States has directly caused in other parts of the world. Even given all that, the fact that these military people are slowly, collectively taking action that could be described as mutiny. It's very slow. It's not happening. Most all of the people who are involved so far are former high-ranking officers, admirals, generals, secretaries of defense, secretaries of or leaders of the CIA, blah, 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 FBI. But is there a slow-moving mutiny going on in the United States? Has it finally come to the point? And again, in this circumstance, regardless of what we may think about the foreign policy or military decisions made in the name of the United States over the past 50 years, I mean, we can all get incensed about an awful lot of it, can't we? But when you have high-ranking officials such as these signing statements against this crazy fucker in the White House, is that unique in recent American history, going back, I guess I'd have to start at Truman. He's the first president I remember, sort of. I don't think it's ever happened before, has it? NBC reported that Robert Gates, former defense secretary, added his name to the statement, which was initially backed by former CIA directors William Webster, George Tenet, Porter Goss, as well as former defense secretary Leon Panetta, former CIA director David Petraeus, who also was a four-star general, along with a number of other officers and officials. All retired. And The Hill says the statement was notable coming from leaders who have served in the intelligence community under both Democratic and Republican administrations. I don't know why that should be notable, because people in the military and in the intelligence community are supposed to be truly and honestly and actually nonpartisan. They're to carry out the policies that are decided upon by the administrations that under which they served, or the military commands under which they've served, which in turn is carrying out the policies of the civilian leadership. But the military doesn't make decisions, policy decisions. It makes tactical decisions, but the policy decisions are made by the civilians. That's how we're set up. So the fact that these statements are being done publicly, signed publicly, the fact that they're being signed is pretty astonishing, I think. The statement said that taking away Brennan's security clearance and threatening to take away the clearances of other officials was, quote, ill-considered and unprecedented. Well, there you go, unprecedented. This is part of what it said, the statement. Quote, security clearances should be based on national security concerns and not political views. We all agree that the president's actions regarding John Brennan and the threats of similar action against other former officials has nothing to do with who should and should not hold security clearances, end quote. Of course it doesn't. It has to do with Trump's pissy little three-year-old ego and his toxic narcissism. Either love me or I will hurt you. One way or the other. And Trump has admitted, once again, he's admitted to more, is there such a thing as post-obstruction of justice? Because he's admitted that he revoked Brennan's clearance because of Brennan's role in the early Russia investigation. Trump said that he considers Brennan and other former officials whose clearances he's deciding to revoke among the leaders of the witch hunt. Hours after Brennan's clearance was revoked, the pissant tweeted, quote, I call it the rigged witch hunt. It is a sham, and these people led it, so I think something had to be done. Woo! Something had to be done. All right, Kathy, can you arrange another break here, please? And we shall return momentarily with another hour's worth of fun and frivolity. Do stick around.
I need a break beat.
Yo,
another one bites the dust.
Oh, yeah.
She said she loved me. She was a spy who lied.
Another one bites the dust.
Right. I could relate. Could you relate?
Another one bites the dust.
Jerry Wonder, fried up.
Another one bites the dust.
Yo, cannabis and John Forte.
Another one bites the dust.
Yeah, dirty cash and baby.
All right.
Another one bites the dust.
You know, one of the complaints, if that's the right word, complaint, that black folk have against white folk is the constant stereotyping of black people. A. B. Would be the fact that white people just don't listen. Because white folk know more than black folk, right? Which is horseshit. I'm trying to get into this little incident that occurred on Fox Sewer Channel yesterday around the death of Aretha Franklin. I'm trying to get into this so that I'm being clear about my intent here. You know, I've stated many, many times that white people are inescapably racist until they decide to do something about it. Not because white people are evil sons of bitches, but because that's the way white people are raised in America. That's what we have been taught. Now, I don't know about the millennials. I'm hoping that they will not teach their children the racism that my generation and the one after me and the one before me and the one after that and the one before that were taught. But even if the parents who are now in their 20s make a supreme effort, not white parents, make a supreme effort not to inject racism into their children, you still have a huge part of the culture that continues to participate in racism. Now, I'm aware that media are trying, especially commercials, are trying to dissolve the lines between the white race and the black race by and that's, I don't believe in the race difference, but colored, whatever. And the way they're doing it, you've probably seen this in so many commercials now for so many products, you have a mixed race family involved. If it's a mattress ad, and I'm sure the white races go just fucking berserk about this. If it's a mattress ad, you have a black man and a white woman going to bed, or a white man and a black woman going to bed. I'm sure they just shit their pants when they see that one, right? God damn, I ain't buying me one of them! No, you could never afford it anyway, you dumb fuck. Go back to sleeping on your straw tick mattress. I'm sorry. So I hope these younger parents, having witnessed what they've witnessed, and even though they were brought up in a racist environment, maybe the effort will be made. Let's hope. But in the meantime, you have the Fox sewer. What did they do? Well, yesterday they put a photo of singer Patti LaBelle, Patti LaBelle, thinking it was Aretha Franklin.
And they hated each other.
And Patti LaBelle and Aretha Franklin, apparently, according to Kathy, did not get along. But they put up, Fox put up, because, you know, black people all look alike. They put up a picture of Patti LaBelle.
Who's not dead.
Who really isn't dead. Let me just, this is how Entertainment Weekly put it on their website. After erroneously featuring a photo of singer Patti LaBelle in a video tribute to Aretha Franklin, Fox News released a statement apologizing for the mistake. Mistake? After further review of the photo and the network's explanation, though, it is evident the statement also contains incorrect information, thereby failing to explain the error adequately. Now, this is so Fox sewer. They fuck up. And then their explanation for the fuck-up is itself a fuck-up, which compounds the original fuck-up, and now you have fuck-up squared. But that's Fox. On Thursday morning, amid reports that the Queen of Soul had died, Fox News broadcast a lengthy video memorial featuring interviews and performances with the singer. However, viewers quickly began calling out an error in a graphic around the 3-minute, 30-second mark, which features a photograph of Patti LaBelle in the background, in the background of a larger, more prominent photo of Franklin, as well as her name and her birth and death years. In a statement to Entertainment Weekly, Fox News executive Jessica Santostefano explained the error. Quote, "We sincerely apologize to Aretha Franklin's family and friends. Our intention was to honor the icon using a secondary image of her performing with Patti LaBelle in the full-screen graphic. But the image of Ms. Franklin was obscured in that process, which we deeply regret." End quote. However, upon review of the photo in question of Patti LaBelle, Entertainment Weekly was unable to find any instance of LaBelle and Aretha Franklin performing or appearing together at the Women of Soul in Performance at the White House special hosted by Barack Obama in 2014, which aired on PBS. When contacted for further clarification of the photo and the performance, Fox News directed Entertainment Weekly to the Associated Press photo used in the tribute, saying the caption of the photo notes, quote, "Aretha Franklin performed at the same event that night," end quote. Though the photo caption does indicate that Aretha Franklin, among several others, did perform that night, she is not in the photo that Fox News specifically directed Entertainment Weekly to. Rather, in that photo, the band and a backup singer are seen. Likewise, Patti LaBelle is spotted in the audience while Aretha Franklin performed that evening, tearing up as she sang, "I never loved a man the way I love you." That, however, appears to be the closest interaction captured by cameras that the two performers shared that night. She's also spotted in the audience when Franklin returned at the end of the special to perform Amazing Grace. Fox News did not immediately reply to a second email by Entertainment Weekly pointing out that Patti LaBelle and Aretha Franklin were neither on stage nor photographed together. Well, then, what happened? Though Patti LaBelle released a statement on Twitter acknowledging Aretha Franklin's passing, the two had a legendary contentious relationship, which was well documented in interviews over the years, further complicating the possibility that evidence might exist of the two singers performing or appearing together in any capacity on the evening in question. Though Fox News' official statement offers up a potential explanation for the error, the available evidence contradicts that explanation, raises questions as to whether Fox misidentified LaBelle or another individual in the image as Franklin, as many viewers originally thought. I'll go with what the original viewers originally thought, because Fox is a racist, or, oh, I know, they have a few black folk work there. It's a racist organization run by racists, populated by racists. So anybody at Fox will tell you, black folk, oh, well, you know, how do you tell them apart? That's a joke. Patti LaBelle is not Aretha Franklin. Unfucking believable. See, this is what my Caucasian brothers and sisters cannot seem to understand. It's shit like that. Do you think when Elton John passes, do you think they'll put a picture of Paul McCartney up and identify it as Elton John? Well, they're both white. They're both English. They both have a certain accent. They're both about the same age. Easy, right? Huh? Photograph? Elton John? Paul McCartney? No, it fucking never happened. But Patti LaBelle? Aretha Franklin? Well, you know, it's understandable. Why making such a big deal about it? They're both black, right? They're both singers. They're both soulful. One thing I've come to realize over the course of my life that regardless of crime statistics, black on black, black on white, white on white, white on black, male on female, female on male, yada, 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 in spite of all that, in spite of the glaring differences in the net worths of white families and black families, in spite of all of that, in spite of fucking mountains, Mount Everests, of bullshit and stress and ugliness that black folk have to put up with, they're still willing to forgive and seek justice. You ever notice that? One more black kid gunned down in the street and there's mom crying her eyes out. I just want justice. You know, it's just part of, it's part of the experience of black folk in America that I'll never completely comprehend, nor will you if you're white. We can observe, we can come to conclusions, we can feel empathy, sympathy, pity, guilt, remorse. We can try to work with our black cousins. We can do this. We can do that. But we can never, ever, ever, you and I, if you're white, we can never, ever, ever, ever understand what has been the black experience in this country. When I was younger and unaware of all this, I could be riding a city bus or downtown or uptown or just out in the public. And they're always, I observed that there always seemed to be some kind of an unspoken connection between black folk. If they saw each other on the street, if they saw each other on the bus, if they saw each other in a theater lobby or in a department store, whatever, there was kind of an eye to eye, an acknowledgement of something that I wasn't privy to. And being a young white boy, I used to think, well, that's because all black people know each other. Of course. That's the conclusion I had. When I was 10, 11, 12, 13, oh, they all know each other. Here in Toledo, Ohio, all 60,000, 70,000 black folk that live here, they all know each other. And then as I got older and more observant and more analytical and more critical, I started to understand. It's because of the shared experiences. If you're black in America, and it doesn't make any difference if you're a black millionaire or a black sharecropper. If you're black in America, and this is not true for whites, if you're black in America, no matter your social or economic status or level or position, you are going to feel similar pain because you're black. It took me a long time to realize that. So, making reference to Aretha Franklin and showing a picture of Patti LaBelle, is almost expected in some racist quarters of this country, of which the Fox News sewer is a prime example. ABC didn't do it. NBC didn't do it. CBS didn't do it. MSNBC didn't do it. CNN didn't do it. Fox did it. Fox. Okay. That's all I had to say about that. It just, sometimes I wish I could go back to being ignorant, comfortable in my racism. I do. I'm ashamed of that, but sometimes I do, because it's a lot easier when you don't have to think, when you don't have to be aware, when you don't have to have a conscious level of understanding that's constantly fighting with your unconscious level of understanding, but a conscious level of understanding that prevents you from just looking the other way and say, well, I didn't see that. Yes, you did see it. And you know what it is. And you know what it represents. And you know what it represents to millions upon millions of Americans. And that's why when I see these white racists and white Nazis and white fascists, in other words, the Trump supporters, when I see them with their mouths open and their middle finger stretched toward the camera and spittle flying out of their mouths and rage and fury all over their faces because they have just been goosed by this fascist Mussolini wannabe, that's when I wish I could change skin color, race, and get the fuck away from that. That's a childish thought, and it's a fleeting thought. But since my racism is rooted in childhood experiences, sure, I'll revert to a childish attitude about it. But Jesus H. Christ, I can remember years and years and years and years and years and years ago, some incident that occurred that came to my attention. I brought it up as a topic on my radio program, and I forget what it was. It really doesn't matter what it was, but I remember saying on the air that race race differences, race tension, race hatred, race this, race that is an issue in this country that will never, ever, ever, ever be resolved until, you know when it will be resolved? When it's no longer, and I may be wrong on this, but I would think when it's no longer, when one is no longer able to differentiate between racial groups. Now, of course, that'll never happen. But it's just something that's not going to be resolved. No matter how many righteous blacks and righteous whites try, it may save the hearts and souls of a limited number of blacks and whites who finally figure it out. But the broader population, the greater population, the wider population, and there have been millions, I'm exaggerating, tens of thousands of books written about the issue of racism. Here, other countries, yada, 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 yada. To what end? All right, moving along. Oh, Trump today said he's going to revoke some more security clearances, and one of them is going to be that little fucker Bruce Orr at the Justice Department. Yeah. Yeah. Asked if he will take away Bruce Orr's clearance, Trump said he expects to do so very quickly. He said, quote, "I think Bruce Orr is a disgrace. I suspect I'll be taking it away very quickly. For him to be in the Justice Department and doing what he did, that's a disgrace," end quote. What did he do? Well, he's one of the investigators. This is how Trump obstructs justice. This is why these filthy pig sons of bitches in the House and the Senate, these Republicans, you have instance after fucking instance of obstruction of justice, and you fuckers just sit on your hands. Damn you and your Christian Caucasian bullshit. You know, every fucking one of you know, as a representative or a senator, that this man should be removed from office and have his ass kicked out of town, figuratively speaking. But you do nothing. You do nothing. Trump, 2 days after he publicly humiliated John Brennan and ultimately himself, because he's such a pig, Trump, he said he was he's getting ready to get rid of Orr, too, referring to the investigation into his collusion with Russians. He said, I say it again, that whole situation is a rigged witch hunt. All the indictments and the convictions and the confessions, and so, it's not really there, right, Donald? It's a totally rigged deal. They should be looking at the other side. Well, Trump, more than a dozen, like I mentioned, U.S. intelligence and national security officials, former, signed a letter criticizing Trump for what they say is an ill-conceived attempt to stifle free speech. Trump pushed back against that argument, said his decision would elevate officials like Brennan and the retired Navy Admiral William McRaven, both of whom criticized him. Trump said, quote, "I'm giving them a bigger voice, and that's okay with me because I like taking on voices like that. Oh, and I've never respected Brennan." God damn. Or his last name. Is it Bruce Orr? Is that his first name? Yeah, Bruce Orr. Orr has drawn scrutiny from this crazy fucker in the White House and House Republicans who feed this shit into Trump. The House Republicans know exactly how to stir Trump up. Nunes knows how to do it. Burr knows how to do it. What's the pointy-headed one from South Carolina? Got that funny haircut? Oh, Pinhead. What's the Pinhead's name? They know what to say to goose Trump into hysterical comments. Okay? Huh? Trey Gowdy, that's right. Trey. Trey. That in the South, sometimes the third child, they will name Trey. You know, uno, dos, Trey. Trey means three. That's when they can't think of it. Well, goddamn, we got John and Victor. What else? What are we going to name the third one? Oh, no. Name him Trey. Anyway, Bruce Orr got scrutiny from Republicans as a result of his links to Fusion GPS. Oh my God! That's the research firm behind the dossier alleging ties between Trump and Moscow. And where did the Fusion GPS dossier come? Well, you should know by now. That was the firm hired by former British MI6 super spy Christopher Steele to assemble the dossier during the presidential race. And how did Steele come across? Steele didn't give a fuck about Donald Trump. Steele was a British spy, an intelligence officer, whatever you want to call him, working on other stuff, when all of a sudden he kept running into this shit about Trump in with the Russians. Like, and he notified the CIA and or the FBI of the United States, hey, listen, in my work as MI6, there's something going on out there. So Christopher Steele put together all the information he was hearing into the infamous dossier. Now, it may or may not include Trump laughing his ass off while Russian sex workers urinated on a bed that the Obamas had slept in. Who knows? Who cares? Trump cares. But that's Christopher Steele and Fusion GPS. I mean, Bruce Orr's wife, Nellie, worked for Fusion GPS during the presidential campaign, something Trump and his Republican fuckwads in the Congress have constantly brought up to make the point that the special counsel probe into Russia's election interference is tainted by bias. That's fucking insane. They're not saying that it didn't happen. They're saying that, well, okay, but your investigation of it happening is tainted by bias? What the fuck does that mean? That's how they fired Strzok. Agent Strzok. Bruce Orr worked in the Deputy Attorney General's office until late last year when he was demoted after it was discovered that he had contacts with Christopher Steele. Christopher Steele, intelligence. Bruce Orr, intelligence. With two of the closest allies on Earth, U.S., U.K. And because he had contact with his counterpart, in MI5 or MI6 or MI20, who the fuck knows? Because of that, he was demoted. Sent to work in a department where there was nothing for him to do except sit at a desk. Now, on Wednesday, remember, Trump put out a list of a number of individuals whose clearances Trump is going to take away from them because they said bad things about me. All the people on Trump's list are former officials except Bruce Orr, which means that if this pig in the White House takes Bruce Orr's security clearance away from him, then Bruce Orr will have nothing that he can do in his position as an intelligence officer, investigator, what have you. Mark Zaid, an attorney specializing in national security cases, told The Hill yesterday, quote, "For Orr, if he doesn't have classified access, he can't perform his job. He would typically then be suspended and then possibly terminated." That's Trump. All right, we're going to take another break here. And when we come back, believe it or not, I have some good news. Now, it's not big good news about Trump and his efforts to destroy the environment, but it's a little teeny bit of good news. But at this point, I'll take crumbs. Won't you? We'll be right back. Get it these days. A federal court today threw out the Trump administration's attempt to delay a safety regulation at chemical plants that was put into effect as a regulation written by the Obama administration. You know, Trump, in his efforts to destroy everything, the deconstruction of the regulatory state, as this creepy fucker Steve Bannon put it, that was the next target, this rule that tried to make chemical plant safety more of a concern. A federal court, the Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia, ruled that the Clean Air Act forbids the EPA from delaying the regulation's enforcement, as the EPA tried to do in June of last year, 2017. It's a major blow to the Trump fascists. It's the second big court loss in the Trump thugs' attempts to delay Obama rules in 2 days. If you remember, on Thursday, the judge ruled that the EPA improperly tried to delay Obama's clean water rule. Why in the fuck would a president of the United States or his – I know the answer to this, so do you – his fascist administration, why would they try to make life more difficult, more dangerous for the American people? Because they're fascists. Now, it's the third loss for this attempt to deregulate EPA actions in just over a week. Another court had ruled last week that the EPA was wrong when it declined to ban the pesticide, the toxic pesticide, chlorpyrifos. The court wrote in its decision today, or its opinion today, quote, "Because EPA has not engaged in reasoned decision-making," I love that, "because the EPA has not engaged in reasoned decision-making, its promulgation of the delay rule is arbitrary and capricious," blah, 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 blah. The judges also said that the EPA's action, quote, "makes a mockery of the statute in question here," and that, quote, "there is no textual basis for EPA's current interpretation of the law." Of course not. It's not based on text. It's not based on the law. It's based on Trump, who is a destroyer. He wants to tear shit and destroy shit and build up these phony little fucking edifices to honor him, much like the pharaohs of ancient Egypt did for themselves. The court went on to say, quote, "by delaying the effective date to put this rule into effect, the EPA has delayed compliance reduced or eliminated the lead-up time to achieve the compliance that EPA had earlier found necessary, that was under Obama, and thus has delayed life-saving protections. A spokesman for Trump's fucked up EPA declined to comment on what the judges said. He said, well, we're reviewing the decision. New York State Attorney General Barbara Underwood, one of the leading litigants opposing the Trump delay of the Obama rule, cheered the court's decision. She said, quote, again and again, the Trump EPA has tried to push through policies that jeopardize our health and fly in the face of the law. And again, we've taken them to court and won. This decision is a major victory for New Yorkers and Americans' health and safety, ensuring that the EPA cannot put special interests first and block common sense protections against toxic chemical accidents, end quote. Now, this rule was made by the Obama administration a week before this country decided to install a fascist president. A week before the inauguration of the Trump pig, this rule was passed or was made. Now, what happened, what the rule, it set new standards for the risk management plans that chemical manufacturing and similar facilities must write to mitigate explosions or other major accidents. They were trying to make it safer for people who worked in these plants. And the Trump EPA said, oh, fuck the workers. Oh, but wait a second. I thought you were a populist, you lying piece of human waste. I thought, it's not what I thought. It's what the people who voted for Trump think. Now, supposing that rule would have been rescinded, and next week, next month, next year, chemical plant explosion occurred because of the rescission of that rule, and supposing 10, 12, 15, 20, 30 people had been either killed or wounded, and supposing of those 10, 12, 15, 20, 30 people, most of them had voted for Trump, would they connect the dots, the survivors? Would they connect the dots and say, God damn, this happened. My husband, my son, my daughter, my wife was just blown to pieces in a chemical plant explosion because Obama tried to prevent it from happening and Trump decided to let it happen. Do you think the connection would be made? And if not, why not? I'll give you a couple minutes. Anyway, the rule that Trump tried to destroy had provisions meant to prevent accidents, better incorporate lessons learned from them and changes in procedures, increase information shared to local first responders, and better inform the public about risks. That's what Trump wanted gone. Why? There's only one rational answer, because he is fucking insane. That's why. Human life means nothing to him. Nothing. Now, that regulation was put in place as a result of the West Texas chemical explosion, if you remember it back in 2013, that took the lives of 15 people. Now, the companies that operate these potential death traps, these chemical companies, they said, as defendants in the suit, they said, well, the rule is too costly and will put my plant at risk of exposing too much information about us. Too much information. I mean, there are no secrets about chemical compounds or the manufacture of certain chemicals that wind up in everybody's house and everybody's bloodstream. What? Oh, too much information about the plant. You mean about the danger of working there. I got it. For a minute there, I thought you meant trade secrets. No, you mean life and death secrets. Immediate. People who work there, not the people you're poisoning out here who eat shit that has your chemicals on it. No. You meant too much information would be exposed about the risk of losing your life if people came to work in your capitalist little shithole. And what was Obama trying to do? Close you down? No. Bankrupt you? No. He was trying to make it possible, you dumb fuck, for your company to keep working. Just like Roosevelt made it one of his objectives to save the banks that had caused the Great Depression. Got to wonder about these Democrats sometimes, don't you? Scott Pruitt, that piece of shit who used to run the EPA, he acted last year to delay the rule. It was his idea. Oh, fuck the rule. I mean, I need to take another trip. Rule? What rule? Fuck the rule. Environmental groups sued to stop the Trump administration from delaying this, arguing that it was illegal, which the court has ruled, and dangerous, which the court did not address. Now, the decision today was written by Judge Judith Rogers, who is nominated by Bill Clinton, Judge Robert Wilkins, an Obama nominee, and guess who the third judge was, who listened to the oral arguments but didn't participate in the decision or dissent from it, Brett Kavanaugh, the Bush nominee that Trump has nominated to the Supreme Court and whose confirmation is pending in the Senate. He didn't vote one way or the other. Maybe it is an expectation that someone who's been nominated for a Supreme Court position should not participate in a ruling that may eventually work its way to the Supreme Court. Or maybe Brett Kavanaugh agrees with Trump and Scott Pruitt that such rules are just unnecessary burdens on the chemical plants. What do you think? Huh? Hard to tell these days, isn't it? Omarosa and Trump. Yeah, the taking away of John Brennan's security clearance was a deliberate wag-the-dog attempt here to refocus media's attention away from Omarosa's revelations. And it worked. Temporarily, I think it'll come back to Omarosa, though, because she's smart enough to keep releasing little bits and pieces of derogatory information about the pig that will bring media back. For example, Omarosa alleges in her new book that Trump and White House chief of staff and racist pig himself, John Kelly. I mean, let's call a spade a spade. Both of them used derogatory terms in reference to Puerto Ricans after the tragedy that struck that part of imperialist or colonialist America. She wrote that Trump and Kelly, quote, referred to Puerto Ricans with derogatory terms many times, end quote, though she didn't exactly specify what the terms were, according to NBC News. She also criticized Kelly over the administration's response to Hurricane Maria, which devastated Puerto Rico last September. It's been a year now. And hurricane season 2018 has begun. She also accused Kelly, White House Chief of Staff John Kelly, of saying that Puerto Rico's government was seeking to, quote, quote, exploit the hurricane, end quote, to get the rest of the United States to pay for its electrical grid. What a shitty fucking thing to say. Would Kelly say that if Iowa, the entire state, went dark and they wanted money from the federal government to repair their electrical grid? Do you think John Kelly would have said that Iowa was trying to exploit the hurricane to get the rest of America to pay? No, I don't think so. But Iowans, for the most part, at least the ones that vote for Trump, are white. Puerto Ricans, it's a little iffy. Some of them are, some of them aren't. What are you going to do? And Omarosa praised Trump's former Homeland Security Advisor, Tom Bossert, for pushing back against all that. That racist attitude on the part of Kelly and Trump, which is what it is. She wrote, quote, and God bless Tom Bossert, who tried to get the resources, tried to fight. He and I were fighting arm in arm, hand in hand, to try to advocate for Puerto Rico to get what they needed, and John Kelly shut it down, end quote. Now, of course, the Trump liars, including Ms. Trunchbull, say that the book is full of lies and the media should not be paying any attention to her. Right. Pay attention to what you did to John Brennan. That would be more right. OK. White House officials argue that Omarosa is a disgruntled former employee trying to make a buck by peddling false stories. What's a gruntled employee? I mean, disgruntled means what? I've never looked at it. That's a word I've never looked up. Usually if I don't know what a word means, I look it up. I've never looked up disgruntled. I guess it means disappointed. But then if there is disgruntled, what would gruntled be? Oh, who the fuck knows? Anyway, Omarosa said Trump's actions during a visit to Puerto Rico. Remember when he was throwing the rolls of paper towels at people who had just had their whole fucking lives destroyed? She said that was a classic example of his lack of empathy. Okay, I'll go along with that, Omarosa, but it's also a classic example of his fucking mental derangement, too. She also wrote, quote, just like Charlottesville, it was all about him. The devastated people of Puerto Rico loved him. He was unfairly persecuted by the media. His total lack of empathy, however, is bad enough. But I believe many of the problems and delays with getting aid to Puerto Rico were partly political. Let me add to that, Omarosa, they were partly political and mostly racist. What a week. I'm sure I'll be saying the same thing. Oh, next Friday, we're going to a wedding in the Poconos. We'll be gone Thursday and Friday. Somebody will be filling in for us or something. So have a great weekend. In the meantime, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are. Going straight to hell. Whoa. Say goodnight, Kathy.
Goodnight, Kathy. Going straight to hell.